When you're grounded, you're like, oh my God, like we don't have time for all the things that I've messed up and how I would take this thing back, right? And so how do people have that conversation? Are they, you know, kind of showing the self-love to say, hey, I get it, I messed up and I'm better for it?
See, I love these types of podcasts because you're a talker. Like, you get paid to talk and not just talk. And you're probably like, I hate that. I hate that intro. But Molly Shang, how are you?
I could not be more fabulous, Ryan, because I am speaking with you.
Oh, get out of here. Come on. You're a pro. Like, first of all, you know, when you meet people and the energy is just... I'm like, yeah, like I feel like I've known you for a decade or you're just my people. And I love what you do. And I want to hear how you got here, because, you know, okay, let's step back. And when you have another talker, like, you get paid to help people figure out their talk, and I'll let you do it your way. How about you introduce yourself? Like, how would you sort of let the listener know what you do for a living?
Well, okay, what I do for a living and who I am. So I'll go two routes. One, I think the fastest way to me is through my passion and purpose statement. And in one word, my passion is ignite. And with heart, creativity, and compassion, I inspire myself and others to have the courage to be true to ourselves, dream big, and harness the wow power of us, so that together we're a force of nature and anything is possible. And that's what moves me. That's why I'm here. And in terms of, you know, the roles, you could label me as executive advisor, coach, board member, radio show host, yogi, tennis player, adoring aunt. I would tell you that in three words, I am a guardian angel, cheerleader, and difference maker through others. So that, I think, just captures the essence of me.
Well, what I love about that answer, and if I'm good at anything, I think I'm fluent at subtext. I'm like, I'm fluent at what's not said. And like, there's so much like confidence when you say that. Like, you're so clear in who you are, and it's like a celebration, like, that you get to be this person every day. But in your last life, I mean, you came from the consulting world. You did it for two decades. Not that you're not still a consultant now, but I mean, you were in some pretty big rooms. I think I read somewhere over two decades, you've integrated 80 different acquisitions. So you've seen a few problems. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that is accurate. And, you know, I give a quick career journey, and I appreciate your kind words, Ryan. And I would just tell folks that the journey to who we are is a lifelong one. It's worth going on. We're always getting to know ourselves, but you do have these kind of plateaus where you sort of can get out of your way a little bit more. And I spent a lot of decades really in my way, and I don't make myself wrong or bad for that. It's part of my own growth, but I think it's been helpful to be able to celebrate that we make mistakes, we make wrong turns. We have these moments of like, oh my God, did I really do that? Did I really say that? And yeah, the answer was yes. You know, and you have to let that go, or you can be your worst enemy, which we don't want. But in a quick nutshell, career-wise, I think people find this a little bit fascinating. So I did not speak English until I was five. I was just a shy kid, super terrified. Cried my eyes out the first day of kindergarten, straight C's through first grade. English was not my first language. And I remember really desperately wanting to fit in. I had a very happy childhood, so I don't mean to feel like I was traumatized, but one Chinese family, one Black family, one Korean family in upstate New York. My parents were pioneers, and they're my idols still. But, you know, I remember really desperately wanting to fit in. And so this notion of diversity and all this stuff that's come full circle, it's very real for me. And so I really have a deep empathy for that. And I think a deep passion for celebrating all of us for who we are. And I just think that that's just the greatest thing ever, when people can free themselves to say what needs to be said and be who they are, right? But I was a geek. I was a chemical engineer, believe it or not. And I wanted to be a marine biologist. I wanted to be Jacques Cousteau. And I went to the library and I looked in the books, and the marine biologist made like $15,000 and the chemical engineer made $31,000. I said, well, can't afford to be a marine biologist, having no idea what money is at that point anyways. But I went to Ithaca, I went to Cornell. I'm very fond of my time there. And I would tell you that nothing was hard after it. So I really did, you know, I'm smart enough, I can hold my own, but I went to school with some really, really smart people. So I was like really happy to be right in there. And I was going to go into chemical engineering. I was going to be a process engineer. And then I ended up going to IBM and changed my trajectory forever. And for someone who was not gifted in communicating or had, you know, any skill or confidence, that IBM sales training program was really a gift. And, you know, just, I think a lot of people like to poo-poo big companies, but I don't think you can do so if you, you know, if you've spent any time there, there's a lot of goodness, you know, and it takes big and small. So very grateful for a few years there. I did the business school thing and I appreciated doing it, but I also in some ways had to unlearn that, because you spend a lot of time thinking, oh, you're so much better than everyone else. And it took me literally 7 years to be like, yes, maybe I got more education, which is a gift, but you're not better than anyone else, Molly. So I went to consulting after business school.
Well, I mean, look, you're a pretty talented person, and it's not about better, right? Like, but it's knowing that you have a skill. And I'm not actually trying to lead to the next question. Actually, I'm not going to go there yet. So the irony is, like, I was on that same hill you were, but I was looking at your school. Like, I was at Ithaca looking at Cornell. And if I think about my own personal fears, I've got two massive, this world decided that these two things were going to stick on me. And my parents are like, here we go again. One of them was, my older brother was smart. That's how he was branded in our family. And I was good with people. And my mom would be like, no, you're good with people. Right. And I took that as I was a stupid one. Right. I must be the stupid one. He's the smart one. And then the second was, my parents are pioneers in their own way. Like, my dad, they were, my mom and my dad separately were my first two interviews for Return on Courage. And I realized that courage is a relative thing. It's like skiing. Some people are bunny slope courage people. Some people are black diamond people, but it's still courage through their lens. And my dad really didn't have a lot of money growing up. And so he did all sorts of odd jobs to figure out how to get out. And I remember my grandfather was a poker player, and my dad would like earn tips at the game at night. And one guy wore a suit. He's like 9 or 10. My dad, I was like, what do you do? And the guy's like, I'm a lawyer. And my dad's like, I'm going to do whatever I can to be a lawyer. That was it. He was on the fast path. So fast forward to my second truth, which is I grew up in a 3-car garage house in Potomac, Maryland. I mean, it's not, you know, it's a silver spoon, no doubt. And the unspoken rule is do better than the last generation. This wasn't like written on a whiteboard. It was just felt. And it was a data point that we weren't in Maslow. But here I am, the good with people, I'm air quoting, the good with people son, who's competitive, and how the hell am I supposed to do better than the last generation when my brother's a smart one? And then I go to Ithaca and I look at all these smart kids at Cornell. So you can see what could like stick with me. If I was on your show right now, what advice would you give me?
If I was on, you're on my show, which you will be on my show, by the way. So this is the thing. It starts within. And so if you want to believe in yourself and you want to have confidence, have it. And it doesn't mean there aren't people around you who influence and cheer or what have you. But, you know, I think being your own best friend and saying, look, you're good. Doesn't mean you're perfect. Doesn't mean you're not going to make mistakes. But, you know, say what your best friend would say to you, which is like, wake the heck up. Don't feel sorry for yourself. Be confident. You're good at what you're good at. Maybe there's things you're not good at. Oh, well, we're all not good at a lot of things. But, you know, gosh, don't be in your own way. And, you know, think about what moves you. Think about what's uniquely you. Embrace that. And know that you have tons of value to help people. And, you know, to serve is to lead, to serve is to live. And boy, if you can find a way to help people that's meaningful for you and can make a difference in ways small and big, that is a life well lived.
Yeah, it's funny that you use the word be your best friend, because in some ways, and I'm curious if you feel this way, like, yeah, I never meant to like stumble into whatever business I'm in now, but I find myself in like a ton of courageous coaching arenas and I'm working with leaders, and it is an incredibly lonely place for them to be. It is just, and maybe that's a data point of the systems that they're in, but it's just hard to be them. Like, they're sometimes they don't know who to trust. They don't know if they're trusted, and they don't know, sometimes they don't trust themselves, right? There's all these things. And I had done this purpose statement in the past, and what landed for me, which is what sparked this conversation, was that I want to be the best friend ever. I want to be the best friend I could possibly be to the leader. And a best friend isn't just tough, it's tough love for the purposes of like being there for them. But then is there this odd bringing the personal you into the professional you? Is that an issue for me as someone that comes in and helps other leaders when they need a friend? They just need like someone who's going to tell it to them like it is. I mean, you're still guiding them and trying to nudge them and help them make the right decisions. But do you see that as a viable way to go about your business, or do you separate your universes?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I want to normalize for folks, it's a choice. And, you know, I have a way that's worked for me. It may or may not work for you, but, you know, and Ryan has a way that works for you, may not work for others. And everyone needs to make their own choice. I would say that a limiting belief is you come out of school and whatever you do, don't be you. Okay. You got to do, if you're at IBM, you're going to wear the red tie or the yellow tie. You're not going to wear the pink one unless it's pink day. You're going to wear the red or the yellow. And I'm not kidding. When I started out the first day of sales training, every man, either red or yellow, there was not one other color tie. And I thought, wow. And I'm sure there was not a memo that went out. But I think the opportunity, and this is what's going on in the world in a big way, is we're not giving ourselves, and in some cases, we're not given permission to be who we really are. And out of the gate, that's like a bad answer, because now you're trying to be someone else. You're not going to be as good at being that person because it's not you. You're the best person at being you. And for those in sports, you know, when you're in flow is when you do your best work. And so you want to be able to be free and be in flow. And so this whole notion, it took me, one of my clients said, great, it took me a while. And when I realized I didn't need to send my surrogate to work, I could be me. And, you know, I do these activities with very senior people, being vulnerable, being open. And every time you create the safe space and give people the invitation to go there, they go, because people are dying to be who they really are, to be open about the things that aren't perfect and aren't right and the mistakes they've made, and still respected and loved. The end. And so you think about this great resignation, and I know this is not going to be earth shaking, and I don't mean any disrespect, but they're leaving because they don't like working for you. And that's a relational thing. Yeah. Maybe you've done something that's really been bad, you know, from a treatment, what have you, but at the core, they don't relate to you. They don't want to be on your team with you. They don't like the way you make them feel or how they feel with you. Like, the end.
Simple
game.
It's
not that complicated, people. It's not that hard.
Simple game. Let's break these up into the first point of like, I don't think it's a new idea, to your point of like, you can be you, but we don't believe it. People don't believe it.
So this is the deal. This is where I'm going to say all part of the problem, all part of the solution, all part of the problem, all part of the solution. You can blame your boss. That Ryan just, he's making me, I'm like, oh, Ryan's making you play small and be a jerk. Oh, okay. I got it. Now, that is not to say, Ryan, for sure, that there aren't some leaders out there who maybe they really run by fear. They really don't care what anyone else thinks. You're just there to execute on the work. And you know what? When you're the boss and it's your gig, if that's what you want to do, not me to judge it. However, we have a choice. Do you choose to align yourself, you know, spend your days morning to night supporting that kind of organization? Because if you do, you're enabling that culture. and it might seem harsh, and I do understand with great compassion when some people really, you know, can't get out, right? Financially or what have you, you really can't. And I get that most people are not in that situation. To your point of courage, you have to decide, how much do I value me? How good do I think I can be, right? And that to me can unlock unlimited potential.
Yeah, my sense is it's the fear thing is real. And I wish every leader, maybe this is the time, if you're listening right now, I know it feels as big as just your brain, but everyone has some semblance of fear. And I wish you could body jump outside of your body and like look at somebody on your team looking back at you. Because it's an awareness problem, in my opinion. Like I always say, like in some ways, what I'm doing is attrition insurance. Like I'm just a UN translator trying to like tell them what's important to the next generation. I always say they want to have their cake, they want to eat it too, and they want the cake to be gluten-free. And it's like your job is not to say they're entitled. It's to create that environment where they're going to leave, which is, I think, what you're talking about. Do you feel it's easier or harder now for somebody coming out of business school to be themselves in the workplace?
I think it is what people make it. I find the concept of, you know, what do other people think? I mean, it's good to be aware, but this is where I think the skillfulness comes in. And I love what you talked about, awareness. It all starts with awareness. So people are like, oh, my boss is, blah, blah. I said, well, you know, let's assume positive intent that the boss doesn't wake up and say, God, I am going to be the worst boss I can possibly be and ruin as many of my employees day to day. That is not what they do. That's not how they wake up out of bed. And so if their actions aren't landing in a way that you think serves the team and serves them, that's on us to help them see that that's our experience. And the leaders I work with, they're really open. To a T, no one thinks they're perfect, right? So I have not yet encountered that. I'm not saying that he or she is not out there. I have not encountered that. But I think if you come into a relationship with the idea of your own humility, but your confidence to say that my voice matters and I want to share it, you're, again, someone could disagree, that's okay. But we owe it to each other to let them know, you know, what's really going on. And then it's two ways. You know, someone said, well, I take great offense that someone said that. And so someone says, you know what? I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to offend you. That's not what I intended. Okay. So now you can say they're lying, but let's say they have that. But if you decide you choose, I'm going to still stay offended, that's on you. So we got to meet both ways, folks. This is not, you know, this whole diversity thing. Everybody's got to figure out, where do we meet in the middle and how can we hear each other? You know, how can we help people, put them in situations that are helping them to do their best work and vice versa for us. And that's a collaborative thing.
So Molly, you're pretty direct. Your New York is showing, which I love, you know, I'm pretty direct, but when you actually get in with the client, and I want to talk about Say It Skillfully, which is your radio show, but which is always, you kind of have to always be direct. There's, you know, you're trying to be clear and succinct. But when you're working with a client one-on-one and you've got your toolkit of skills that you could turn to, what percent of the time do you feel like, okay, this is a moment where I absolutely have to be direct versus I'm going to give this person just enough so they can get there themselves?
So, you know, it's so funny. People think I'm direct. I think I'm a marshmallow, but, I it's all about helping someone see themselves, see their actions in a way that might be different than they are right this moment, right? Because we have our own reality. I have my reality of myself, and I have to be open to the fact that other people may see me in a different way. And so the ability to help someone be open to the fact that, you know, we all have our own realities and we think they're right. So you might think you were very kind and compassionate. The other person may not have thought that. We're not making any person wrong or bad, but we need to be open to the fact that that may not have come across the way you thought. And I do that in a, I would say, direct way. I'm not trying to like read tea leaves and have people be mysterious. It's like, hey, it's a very easy, how do you think that landed? You know, this is what I observed. What did you observe? How do you, and so it's you know, if you call that direct, I would just say it's being open in some dialogue. You know, I'm fair to share my experience. And listen, I'm fine. You know, if people want to take the input and it works, great. If it doesn't, great. But, you know, I'm not here to impose, you should do this. You know, it's a free world. And, you know, I think that people are grown up. And most of the people I know, if they realize that they might be hurting others, they don't want to keep doing that. So there's kind of a natural driver for change. They actually want to help the team. You know, I don't have people that want to hurt the team. I know it seems kind of basic, but it boils down to that.
But if they don't see it until they see it, right? And so how direct are you on that? I mean, I think that's kind of where, what I wonder.
Yeah, that's a coachability thing. So, you know, I think part of, and this is Marshall Goldsmith, my beloved friend and mentor, you know, as consultant coach, your number one thing is picking your client. So you have to pick people who want to be better. They are open to being wrong. They are open to change. Great. And if they're not, that's okay. Maybe not the best choice of a client. Just saying.
All right. So here's the deal. I have not shared this. This is like breaking news. Okay. So my word of 2022, you would think courage would always, it's courage again. No, it's not. That's not courage. It's actually coachability. That is the word. You're the first person that said it. And I think this is it. This is the big secret is like, how do you find people that are coachable, that want to be coached, that want to be better, that are open and willing to listening and hearing another perspective and then adding that onto their perspective, then they can make their own decision. So when you say picking your clients, how do you judge? Like, do you have a question or three you turn to go, oh, this is coachability.
That's a good question. I haven't had to be in a situation where I was really worried about that. If I were testing for that, let me think about this. If I were testing for that, well, I did an interview yesterday. I said, you know, how coachable are you? So you can see how
direct,
the person responds.
Direct.
You see? Well, direct. So I think this is a good point. How coachable are you? It's different than how coachable are you? That's direct. Okay. How coachable are you is seeking first to understand. And so you see how they respond. Are they light? And then a few examples. And you get a sense for, this is to me is when you're grounded. Because when you're grounded, you're like, oh my God, like we don't have time for all the things that I've messed up and how I would take those things back. Right. And so how do people have that conversation? Are they, you know, kind of showing the self-love to say, hey, I get it. I messed up and I'm better for it, which means I could really appreciate that that has to be what other people do and embrace that. So, you know, I don't think it's, if you get a defensiveness, well, the other person said this, or you know, I was in a tough situation. You know, I don't really think it takes a lot to suss that out.
It's funny. I'm replaying a conversation I had yesterday with somebody that I'm coaching, and they were talking about, we need to do this and we need to do that and we need to do this. And I was trying to articulate, the other person isn't hearing we, right? They're hearing, you need to do this and you need to do that and you need to do this. So I'm smiling at that because I'm like, all right, how do you help people see the differences between what they said and how the transfer is happening? Yeah.
Well, I was going to say on that one, if you know, someone's saying that, it could be something that, you know, when you have heard you say we, and let's just call this other person Larry. So just pretend right now you're Larry. Okay. And you hear you saying that. What's going on for Larry?
That's the tool. That's what I mean by the toolkit. Like, when do you let them give them the
Always.
Space?
Right. You always. Yeah. I mean, you have to tell sometimes. I don't know. That to me, it's a bit of a, you know, it's helping the person find their way. And this goes without saying, right? With whatever your client's mind, you co-create the relationship you have with each other so that it's not some mysterious thing. But hey, how's this work? And people bring it up and they may ask a direct question and then I ask a question back. And, but that's something that two people in any relationship, you figure out what's the dynamic way that we interact to kind of do our best work together.
Do you describe yourself as a consultant first or a coach or a radio host?
I'm all over. I mean, I use executive advisor because I do the consulting part in business. And, you know, I've done 80 acquisitions, so I like the business part of it. I call that the what. To me, if you first understand and know the who and how we work together, that's really foundational. That sets up doing the best work together. So I see myself as both with a front end load on the people part and then, you know, then having the ability to help people with their business decisions. So I tend to like, I mean, I like the whole, I'm a chemical engineer. We like the whole process part. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But engineers, like there's only one truth, right? Like there's only one particular way that the thing comes together and it's got to be this way. And here's, otherwise it doesn't work. I feel what's great about having you on is you're a coach to me too. Like I learn a lot from you. This is like my therapy session right now. And I struggle with this because I love anything courage, right? So there's times where I'm doing courageous leadership work and it's, and the remedy to loneliness is trying to be there and be a good friend and a good ally. But I still love, you know, I came from creative business. You know, I think I wish more business people knew what creativity could do for their bottom line. And I wish creatives knew how to make money. And so like, I try to sort of thread that line to set them free in their business with courageous ideas. So you got courageous leadership and then there's courageous teams, right? Like this team isn't going anywhere if we don't pass go and we get this team to function by themselves. Well, that's about 11 minutes I just wasted explaining all the things that I'm doing. So how would you describe what I do?
I don't know enough about your full portfolio, my friend. I really don't. So I think it's great. My sense is you're helping people be real. And for a lot of people, that takes a lot of courage, you know? And I think Brené said the root of the word courage, cur, heart, you know, and it's telling the story of who you are with your whole heart. And for a lot of people, that takes courage because the real story has ups, downs, twists, turns, and lots of it's not pretty.
It's so true. Yeah. Well, and it's sad that this is not the first time I've said this on the show, that telling the truth is an act of courage now. It's almost disappointing that that's where we've arrived and we're back to where we started. Like, why can't we just be real and bring ourselves to work? So say it skillfully. Let's talk about your radio show. How long have you been doing it?
So this is the thing for folks, the most accidental thing ever known to man. Let me just pick up with a quick segue because I did this MBA thingy and then I ended up going to consulting, but then I went to this high growth company, US Filter, that consolidated the water treatment business. So I'm a young person integrating companies all around the world, like not the most usual job. So as you can imagine, that's a lot buying former competitors and you're really having to deal with the people part. I didn't realize that at the time, but I say that because it's come full circle, right? So then I end up doing that. It was super fabulous. Went to Cisco, big M&A machine, smack dab in the middle of a business development group. Awesome. I start to see the culture down at Cisco go down a bit. And I'm, you know, I'm very, as you know, idealistic. And I'm like, people were throwing people under the bus. People would say they were going to do something, not do it, and get promoted. And I was like, this is not working for me. So I ended up getting involved with a coaching program, which is the Organization and Relationship Systems Coaching. And it's an amazing program that helped me be a better me. And I just started to realize that this notion of who are we, this relationship word unpacked on three levels, right? Your emotional intelligence. And I articulate what's going on for me, my social intelligence, identifying someone else's emotional experience and empathizing with it. Key to connection. We have to connect. And at the highest level of relationship system intelligence, you and I are on the same podcast, but having a different experience of it. And the ability to empathetically understand, to walk in each other's shoes is fundamental to collaboration, to powerful group identity, to sustained success. So when I did this program, I'm like, this is what every organization, nonprofit, for-profit, big, small, anywhere in the world needs. And so I had a chance to implement some of that work at Cisco. And that led me to then go off on my own and want to help senior management teams win as one. which means commit to each other's success, powerfully lead together, and outperform. And that's what I see. And culture starts at the top. You know, it's sustained at the base. But if we could help the leaders be real, come together in an amazing, you know, championship level way, this is the best way for an organization to thrive. So I'm doing fine in my little world. I have the unbelievable blessing of meeting Marshall Goldsmith. And Marshall paying it forward, being generous, just, you know, like I cannot say enough fabulous things about this man, but he really inspired me. He's like, he's paying it forward, giving it away for free. And I put this video on LinkedIn of a, you know, 90 seconds where a junior person had to disagree with management in a room. I thought 10 people would watch, and like 38,000 people saw the video, and boom. So this thing 3 years ago then took over my life. I created new videos. You saw them, 1.5 million views. And then I got asked, do you want to have a radio show? Of course, I don't even know what that is. And of course I say, yes, absolutely. I want to have a radio show. So that's where it started. And you say, why? So when I came up the ranks, bosses, CEOs, I could sit there and be a fly on the wall and hear them navigate really tough situations. Invaluable to my own development. So I wanted to create an opportunity for people to call in and for other people all around the world to hear that, one, we all have conversations we struggle with, and two, to be able to provide real-time coaching and advice so people could better handle them. And then I morphed the show because I started inviting guests, and these were guests who were, you know, quote unquote, super successful. But most importantly, I felt were real. They were willing to be vulnerable about the stuff that was tough, and they were succeeding on their terms. Right. They weren't like kind of climbing the ladder. They weren't just having great accomplishments, but not feeling centered and grounded and having a meaningful life. And I just wanted to shine a light on these brave, courageous souls who were willing to kind of go out on a limb and create a path that helped them succeed, that they found meaningful. So that's how it all started. And I see this opportunity to take it to the next level. So I'm starting my little Say It Skillfully enterprise, because the most important thing in your entire career is how you interact with yourself and others. And there's not a lot out there to help people. You get sales training, negotiation training, presentation training, but this ability to kind of get at one with yourself, put yourself in someone else's shoes, and come together is something that I'm going to fill. So that's my hope for the world. And for everyone listening, I want, you know, I'm cheering for you, and I want, you know, to encourage people to be part of the solution and help everybody find their voice, use it in an authentic way. And the punchline is, we want to get to an accurate shared reality, right? And if we have an accurate shared reality and we're all on the same page, we're going to make the best decisions. We're going to execute with speed. We're going to achieve outstanding outcomes at work, and more importantly, in our life. And that's what moves me about this little opportunity.
It is it just is. It's not even like, I could see you having this business plan, or, well, you know, you being the engineer in you, this organized plan out, but you're doing it, and it's fun to watch. I'm curious if there was, if you had to do it like a pie chart of topics discussed on the show today, what would you break it down by percentage, like the top three topics that are called in? And I'm going to do the thing I shouldn't do, but just to see this now, how has that changed? Like, if you ask, like, when you started 3 years ago, have the topics changed, or have they stayed the same? Have the percentages stayed the same, or are they different?
So I would say that not a huge shifts, but for sure, the biggest challenge people have is with their boss. For sure. Their boss this or boss that. I can't get my boss. My boss doesn't understand. The boss is a real problem.
I mean, is it like 75%? Is it 50%? Is it 90%?
I couldn't. You know, I just say that top of mind is at least a third. You know, that's a topic where people are just trying to navigate that relationship. Okay. I think the idea of feedback, performance, communicating that is a huge topic. And then teamwork, including, I would say, working through conflict is huge. So those three buckets. And
yeah, all communication.
Yeah, all, you know, I just, the Say It Skillfully thing, it is in the how. It's not about being perfect. And it starts with each individual. And I just want to encourage folks, you know, it's easy to say, oh, my spouse, my sister, my colleague. And I'm not saying there isn't a degree of their level of accountability, but if we start with, how might I have somehow inadvertently contributed to this mess? And the reason that's so important is not to make yourself a bad person, but it's to create the spirit of mutual accountability, which is just we are all in it together. And if we model, I can model being in it all together. That's what I can control. I might be bummed out. Well, Ryan's not taking his fair share. Listen, that's Ryan's problem. You do what you can do. And when you're modeling that, it makes it a heck of a lot easier for other people to do the same. So I think it's a super leadership opportunity, whether you're technically, you know, a leader by title or not.
And 3 years from now, what do you think the pie chart would look like? Still a third on the boss?
I hope the pie chart would have gone down to a quarter on the boss. I really hope. And the reason I say that is not because the bosses are going to have an epiphany. I use this lightly. And believe me, this is with due respect to leaders who are creating jobs and, you know, making the tough calls and having it all on the line. But, you know, if we're waiting for the leaders to have an epiphany, that's we're going to be waiting a long time. So we need to activate the base. Everyone has to help get to a fuller transparency about how we can be working better together. And leaders want constructive input in a way, right, that isn't, you know, and is, can be received in a good way. And that's on us.
I don't know. Here was my epiphany. My epiphany was everything is slow cooked. If I'm a, and remember, I came from the service business. So I would always tell my team to put all of their energy, not on the core leaders, but the second layer, who probably are trying to break through with the leader. And that's why you have a third of your calls going, my boss, my boss, my boss, my boss. But if you can like guide and nudge and educate that second tier, the epiphany is like, that's your future leadership group. Mm-hmm. Right. And now is it's like human stock market. Let me be that group's best friend where they haven't learned all those bad habits. And I think we could clearly see even like purpose. Purpose is a great example, right? Like some leaders like that ship has sailed. Business is about making money. I don't understand why you won't stay for 25 years for a nice watch. What's wrong with these people? That's what I did. I put my head down. Okay, we're clicheing all over the place. But like the next generation, they truly think that my generation messed up their world, and they want to invest all of their time, including their work, into being part of the solution. At least that's what I'm saying. Are you feeling that's real or fake?
I think that it's real. The younger generation people I know, I think are spectacular. And what I love about them is you are in my generation. We were willing to kind of pay the dues. Molly, go move this glass of water from this table to that table. I'm like, okay, great. I'll move it. They would be like, well, why water? Why this table? Why am I moving it? How come, you know, so, and people want to moan and groan. And I'm like, well, I actually think they're helping us be better, and let's embrace it. And by the way, they're getting stuck with a lot of stuff that hasn't really worked very well. And I think the shout out I have to institutions that maybe aren't changing as quickly as you would like is they're not going to pay their dues. They'll spend a little bit of time with you. They're not going to invest the amount of time that Ryan and Molly did. And they will go off and do their own thing. They may even compete against you. And so I would really encourage folks to figure out a way where you can truly hear all those voices, have them co-create environments where we can be our best selves. And by the way, I hear this a bit, you know, everyone wants to work from home. And so, yes, listen, I get that. And if we help them appreciate, if you were the CEO of this company and you had 100,000 people just working from home, how easy do you think that is to manage? Do you think, what the heck, how? And if we could have empathy for all the other sides and all the viewpoints, we could then come to, I think, a better way forward so that we can all be our best selves and come together in ways that are, you know, 1 and 1 equals 11. And so I would encourage a positivity. If you're going to stay in an environment that maybe it's slower, or maybe it, you know, there's parts of it that aren't so safe, you know, do what you can do. Make it a game. How can I help in my little world create amazing culture? And people will, you know, and I have clients who've done this. And by the way, is it shocking that everyone wants to come to their group? No, it's not shocking. Everyone wants to come to their group. So control what you control and, you know, take the leadership opportunity bull by the horn and see what you can do.
I love having you on the show, Molly. I've learned so much. I really have. It's like I can just hear you. Well, this is what you do for a living too. So I can do this more. We're going to have you come back on and do this again. As somebody who doesn't need help with the word, with the right words, I know you probably be like, of course I need help with the right words, but I'm pretty darn good at this. I always say, if like someone's actually made it 40 minutes to the end here, right? They're invested in this conversation. How would you take us out? If you're going to end the episode, what's the right way to do so?
Well, first, I want to honor you. You're going to be on my show and you're a real inspiration. And I love your energy and your own, what comes across as fearlessness, though I know that there, as you mentioned, we all have fear. So I want to honor you first and foremost, Ryan, because how you move through space, I think it's a great example for how people can be at one with themselves, can be continually growing and encouraging others to do the same. So thank you.
Oh, thank you.
And you know, I really at my core, believe in the goodness of people. So I would ask folks to believe in yourselves, to go on a limb, be who you are, skillfully say what needs to be said. And if you need to learn skillfully, you know, I'm here to help you. And know that, you know, it's going to be okay. And there's stuff going on all around the world. And what you can control is how you respond to it. So if you can stay high, if you can show compassion for yourself and for others, find goodness, meet people where they are, and, you know, try to be a little bit better tomorrow than you were today. You know, I think the world would benefit from that. So while there's lots of things that make my heart heavy, I'm very optimistic about our opportunity. And I think the more that people grab the bull by the horns and come together in powerful ways, that we have no idea our potential, and the sky really is the limit.
Oh man, I'm leaving ready for the day. I feel good about today. And I, part of me is like, again, we're wrapping it up here, but I'm so curious where your mind went when you thought, when you shared that. Like, where does your mind go? Like, are you thinking about current events? Are you thinking about New York City? Are you thinking about just what the next decade looks like for you? Where did your mind go?
Well, I'm sitting overlooking the northwest part of Manhattan in a very expansive, over the Hudson, pretty blue, pale blue sky. And I have a lot of hope. And, you know, I do have a lot of energy. People remark about that. And I would tell people that I do the self-care thing so that I do have a lot of energy. And I feel that that's something that I do for others, is to say, look at, you know, we can do it. And there's brightness ahead. You have to see it. Sometimes it's darkest before the light, and know that that's part of the journey that we're on, but for sure, better together, Ryan, for sure. And for everyone out there, there are people who care about you, who want to help you. I know you care about people. You want to help people. Do it, you know, offer how you can help, and, you know, keep the faith. Greatness awaits.
I'm all for it. Look, hey, I'm all for it. Let's go get it. And however I can help you, by the way, sayitskillfully.com.
Sayitskillfully.com. And I'm in the process. We're going to be creating an uplift on the website. So I'm very excited about that in the very near future. I do want to invite people to call into the show when I take callers, and know that, you know, we get to unpack your situation, but you're being a help to other people around the world who, you know, want to know that it's going to be okay, and that we can have the conversations we need to have. And it doesn't need to be hard, folks. You know, you can have it in a way that really is open-hearted, and you're growing from it. So I hope I'll cross paths with listeners in however many ways we can.
Thanks, Molly. Stay skillful. Keep saying it skillfully. That's almost a mouthful. And I'll see you soon.
I'll try to take good care, Ryan. Appreciate you.